Welcome to Social Distance Central. Wait, that's what this is now? You're on Sportsnet 650. Here's Bick Nizar and Brendan Batchelor.
Welcome. It's Social Distance Central, the show with a COVID name that isn't about COVID-19 during the COVID-19 era. I am Bick Nizar. With me, the voice of the Canucks on Sportsnet 650, Brendan Batchelor. How's it going, Batch?
It's good. I'm fired up. It's game of takes day, Bick.
So yes.
We're going to get to that later in the show, but I'm really excited for the first edition of Game of Takes, and we've got a couple of eager listeners who are going to take part today.
Our inaugural competitors for Game of Takes, Chris Keene and Joey Curie. I hope I got those names right. At Chris K Films, at 604 Joey on Twitter. You'll hear from them later on in the show. And we've been talking about this all week. We gave you a topic. You got to text in 650 650 or tweet us at Batch Hockey, at Bick 650 or at Sportsnet 650. And we chose two people. It was Chris and Joey this week. We're going to continue that moving forward. So every Monday, every Friday, I think we'll give you a topic. And then you got to try to get your way into the Game It Takes. And this week, Chris and Joey are going to be going for the throne to start it all off. And again, the topic du jour was Jim Benning. We're going to continue talking about Jim Benning as he met with Reach Deep yesterday as well, right after us, shared some interesting thoughts. And also, Dan Murphy is going to join us in a couple of minutes as well. Of course, as we, what are we, 79 days away from a potential start date. So this is hour one of our pregame show, Batch.
Yeah, the first of probably 40 or 50, well, maybe that's a little bit of hyperbole, but a ton of interviews with a guy like Murph and all of the people around the coverage of the Canucks, breaking down the matchup of the Minnesota Wild and the Vancouver Canucks. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that we will do a ton of analysis about this series, and then the result could be completely different than what any of us might expect because of the unprecedented situation we're in. So we'll chat with Murph in a couple of minutes, but I tend to think this may set a record for the most analyzed playoff series in the history of sports because of the amount of time that we're going to have to break down every little detail of Vancouver, Minnesota.
It's going to be so funny too. And I think one of the things too, as we learn more about this playoff format and everything, we're trying to like label this already with an asterisk. And I think everyone's fear is not necessarily about the format itself, because everyone's getting what they want, right? 16 teams, you're still getting that. Four rounds, you're still getting that. You shouldn't have complaints about that. If it's best of five, I get it, but you still should be able to, like, the better teams to still win a best of five. The thing that I think everyone's worried about is how will the hockey itself look after so much layoff? And that's when you can apply an asterisk. If it looks like shinny and it plays out like shinny, then we can look at and say, you know what, this didn't work out as well as we thought. But the process to get there is fair, and we're doing this the right way. And so we're spending all this time analyzing a potential playoff series. It might just look weird when we get there.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what that hockey looks like. There have been some rumblings. I know I saw Elliot Friedman put it out the other day that each team is going to have a couple of exhibition games before that series even starts. So then there's the possibility that you're a little bit more up to speed. Also, and you know, we touched with this briefly with Mike Zygmantis yesterday, but if they have a 3-week training camp, that's a long training camp. You think about a regular training camp to start a season, and albeit that's in a situation where guys have been skating all summer, but it's 4 days, and then they're right into the exhibition season. So I don't think there should be too much of a worry of the hockey looking like shinny and not being intense if they legitimately give these guys 3 weeks and two exhibition games to get ready. They should be firing on all cylinders by the time we get to games that matter.
Yeah, I'm less concerned about that, but just for the asterisk truthers. There are some, right? And I understand everyone's concerned about it, but it's exactly what you pointed out, Batch. Like, these guys will figure it out, especially if they have that much time. They will get up to relative sharpness to where they left off, right? Game 70. I think that's why we have the longer training camp. A, because it just takes longer in general to get everyone through their own processes now with the social distancing and whatnot. It's going to take guys different, you know, the amount of ice time you're going to get is going to be different. So giving them as much time to get up to speed, I think, is the right course of action.
Well, and you talk about asterisk truthers as well. Anybody that wants to put an asterisk on this playoff format is going to find a way. You know, if you want to be technical, you can already put an asterisk on it because all of these guys are going to be healthy now, whereas in a regular situation,
oh,
you
man,
have to deal with injuries.
That's a crazy take, though.
No, but there are people out there that will have it. You know it.
Right, but then you're just suggesting you want people to get hurt in every other season, so your legacy of the Stanley Cup is always the same.
Well,
you should want people to be healthy.
Yeah, maybe. Well, maybe a better way to put it is that teams aren't having to go through the grind of an 82-game season immediately followed by the start of the playoffs. Guys have had a chance to rest. You know, even guys that were a little bit bumped and bruised and, you know, had been playing through stuff like that are going to be back to 100%. So that changes the way these playoffs will be approached by teams as opposed to what would have normally happened. But all of that is to say that there are going to be people that put an asterisk on this playoff no matter what happens. So in my mind, you know, let's just ignore that side of it, because that's an argument that will be there 20 years from now, where, let's say, I don't know, the Pittsburgh Penguins win the Stanley Cup this year. And in 20 years from now, it'll be like, oh yeah, remember 2010 when Pittsburgh won the cup? And someone will be like, yeah, but that's just the way this season is going to be. But, you know, if we accept it and embrace it and realize that we're getting hockey back, and this is still as close a facsimile as the league could have come up with the usual playoff format, then things will be fine and we get our hockey back. And that's really all that matters when it comes down to it.
We can do the butterfly effect of every playoffs then and be like, well, if Vegas wasn't screwed against the San Jose Sharks, you know, who knows what could have happened? We could have had a St. Louis Vegas conference final, and suddenly that's a different match. You can go through that road and find asterisks to every single playoffs. Let's get to Dan Murphy, Canucks host on Sportsnet. You see him all the time. Getting ready for when games do come back, 70 some odd days away. Murph, are you excited now? It feels like there's a light at the end of the tunnel finally.
Well, I suppose in some aspects it does, that we're seeing these comprehensive plans of what things will look like if indeed they can move forward in a safe manner. I'm not sure what the work environment will look like for people like Batch and myself and Shorthouse and Garrett and Hershey. I still very much would have my doubts that we'd be allowed in the building. I think games will likely be called off monitor, but for all of that, I'm all for seeing whatever sort of season or postseason, I guess, they will give us. I will watch for sure. I don't care that it's a little bit gimmicky. I think it would still be a very difficult tournament to win, perhaps one of the most difficult considering the circumstances around it. And a lot is still up in the air. But I just like the fact that as of mid last week, there was actual kind of hockey news to chew on, matchups to talk about, one step in this phase moving forward. So I still, you know, have my doubts at whether it could be finished. But I'm glad that they are, you know, doing their best to try to get this season completed, get a Stanley Cup handed out, because, I do think it's important, not just for your fan base, but also for the health of the league moving forward financially.
So they did meet three times this year. What do you recall of the three matchups with Minnesota?
Oh, man, you put me on the spot now. I remember the last game. I remember Fiala. Actually, I remember the last two games, and Fiala was dominant in both, the one in Minnesota and then the last time they played at Rogers Arena not too long ago. I remember also that Minnesota being on a tremendous run, and that includes Alex Stalock, about a 15 or 17-game run they had been on where he was posting one of the better save percentages in the league over that span. And I just remember them being kind of like it's a team that you look at the roster, aside from their top four in defense, you say, whatever. But they're a team that really does control play. I mean, the analytics after the coaching change were quite good. And I think they'll be a very tough out, just as I think Vancouver would be too. Maybe it's a pick'em. I like Vancouver's goaltending better. I like their top six forward better. But really, I don't think there's a whole lot if you look at the metrics of the two teams that separates them. So I think it'd be a very tight and probably a fun series, but I don't know how much goal scoring there would be.
Sportsnet's Dan Murphy with us here on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. How much of a factor could playoff experience play in a situation like this? The Canucks are a young team with a young core and with a number of players who either haven't played in the playoffs or haven't played in the playoffs in a number of years. You can't necessarily say the same about Minnesota. Does that element play into this and maybe set things up to be a little bit more difficult than things might look on paper for the Canucks?
Maybe, but I just think it's so much different with no fans in the stands in terms of feeling the weight of playoff hockey, so to speak. And maybe the play-in round helps a little bit if Vancouver were to get by that first round versus Minnesota into the actual dance. But you have to remember, too, I mean, Vancouver does have Toffoli, Pearson, Myers, who's been in a bunch of playoff series in recent years, JT Miller as well. So it's not like they're devoid of playoff experience, but your young core four, only Horvat's played games. Your goaltender has never played one. So I think it could be a factor. But, I mean, when you look at the players on the Minnesota Wild that have that experience, I mean, Staal is up there. Parise is up there. And Suter, I guess you'd throw into that mix as well. So I don't know if I would weigh it that heavily in favor of Minnesota, just because I think this is going to be so, so much different without the electricity of the crowd, home or away. And I think that that does take a little bit of weight off. I think it should anyway, of players when they're playing in these circumstances.
And you touched on it briefly that in all likelihood, all of us broadcasters will not be there in person to take these games in. For you, you know, what could coverage look like in that scenario? Do you expect that we're doing post-game Zoom calls with players, or I guess it's too early to really speculate on anything like that?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think that they're going to, you know, if they're trying to ensure the safety of the players and the staff, I think they're going to keep this bubble as tight as possible. And whether it's kind of like Olympic style, three games in a day, you know, games have been called off monitor before. And why, maybe we're allowed into the hub city, but I can't see there being access to players for reporters or hosts. So who knows? I mean, it's still a long ways away. Maybe if Canada does get a hub city, it changes a little bit. I'm just not so sure. I just think that they'll probably keep it as absolutely tight as possible. And so if that means off-day Zoom interviews and then we tape chats or panels or stand-ups and you do stories that way, I suppose that's what it would look like. But I mean, obviously there's not going to be any scrums. And I'd be surprised at this point if there's even any podium access. I just think they're going to do it as safely as possible. And if that means shutting us out of the building, then that's what's going to have to be done.
Dan Murphy joining us from Sportsnet. You see him on the Canucks broadcast when there is games. I'm curious if you heard Jim Benning's comments yesterday when he joined Reach Deep. You know, he did speak on, actually also on the Zoom call as well, about the health of a couple of players, Josh Levo, Michael Ferland. At this point, I know some people are excited about the games coming back, and obviously we talk about health for all the teams. I think there's an expectation that, you know, one or both of those guys might be ready to go for that time. Based off the comments yesterday, are you encouraged or discouraged of their potential availability?
Well, I mean, first off, I'll start with Levo. That's probably a little discouraging news, but then if you read up on other athletes that have broken kneecaps, some say it's taken them a full year to recover, so perhaps we shouldn't be surprised. And secondly, I think both would be very useful players in the playoffs. We've seen Ferland have an impact before, even against Vancouver. But I don't, you know, I just don't think we can give the benefit of the doubt to Ferland at this point. I don't think the team can expect it because, let's say he was declared fully healthy again. Like, how many minutes has he played since early in the season? Has he played 20 minutes? Like, does he play another 5 minutes and all of a sudden they come back? So, I wouldn't count right now on either of these guys being a big factor for this team if indeed it starts up, you know, first or second week of August. I just don't think you can count on them. And that's unfortunate for Vancouver, but I think considering the overall health and considering the break gets you back, Markstrom gives Besser a little more time. Tanev is healthy again. I think you'll take that even if you don't get Levo or Ferland back to the people in this so-called playoff run.
and some other news that came out of Benning's media availability yesterday is the Canucks are at least considering holding their training camp in the United States if the Canadian government doesn't lift the 14-day quarantine. And you can understand logistically why they might be looking at that with, you know, players they've got overseas in Sweden, and Elliot Friedman reporting today in his 31 Thoughts column that he doesn't think the Canucks are alone in that. Did that surprise you, or does it make sense that they would be looking at options like that to try and avoid having to quarantine their returning players?
Well, not only that, Batch. I mean, the border with the States is closed until what, June 21? Is that right?
I'm not sure off the top of my head.
That sounds right, yeah. That date might be a bit more specific than I thought.
And I believe there might be an exemption that is in place for pro athletes in that category as well, at least going to the United States.
Yeah, there is south. They're called essential workers right now because they want to be open for business. But no one from the States, I don't believe, can come to Canada right now. So if that restriction is lengthened, well, then you can't even get the guys living in the States back up here. So I had thought about this last week. Let's say players coming from Sweden, they have to, self-isolate for 14 days. Does that make a lot of sense? So where if you're going to the States, they recommend it, but it is not mandatory. And I was talking to Nick Taylor of PGA Tour, and he doesn't believe he has to quarantine for 2 weeks when he goes down ultimately to play in his first event. So I think it makes a lot of sense if there are uncertainties and you need to start planning for the first 2 weeks of July, that I think you hope for the best, but you prepare for the worst. And if that means just making sure everybody can get together at the same time and you can get started, then I think you have to look at the States.
And you were rather adamant on Twitter just about hub cities, right? It being Vegas, Columbus, LA is the name that, or a city that Friedman mentioned with us. It just seems like logic would dictate that we're going to end up there, as much as the league may want to play in Canada, just for the tradition of respecting the game as far as its cultural impact here in our country. But it feels like what you're talking about is we should all accept the idea that it's going to be played down south.
I think so, and I think the league would like it up here too as well financially. It'd be cheaper, obviously, given the dollar. I think there'd be a lot of support for Hub City being Canada from the league and the players for that matter. I think Vegas is probably a lock. I think that they can, you can give a resort, especially if the players want families to be a part of this and be part of the bubble, and this is going to be a big talking point going forward. Maybe a resort opens up their hotels to the players and the families, and that becomes an isolation bubble in itself. That would be a big attractive to the players to have their families around. So I think Vegas a lock. I'm not sure the other ones. I think Columbus is offering up Ohio State's facilities. There is a practice rink in nationwide as well, so you could have morning skates while the games are going on the big rink, if indeed there's going to be 2-3 games a day. There's a lot of choices. I believe Vegas will be one. The other one that's you have to think too, that I mean, it's going to be weird play game times to start with, if there's Olympic style, but having both in the Pacific time zone, I mean, that is probably not ideal for Eastern cities and TV numbers. But at this point, I think you have to do what's best. And if they decide that the two hub cities have to be out in the West, and that's what it's going to be.
And you mentioned the players' families and whether they're allowed to be a part of it is still a big issue that has to be resolved. And really, over the last couple of days, looking through it, there's a laundry list of things that the PA and the National Hockey League are going to have to work out before we even get to a point where training camps are opening, whether it's the economic issues and how it's going to affect escrow and things like that. So as much as we've been very excited about this week, Murph, it does seem like it is still an if and not a when these games get played.
I would agree. I mean, I think this first phase was probably, and there was a lot of discussion around it, obviously, but I think this was the easiest one to vote on for both sides. Now the players are going to have a lot more of a say in terms of their safety, in terms of their, do they want to be locked into a hotel and not be able to go to a restaurant for dinner? Are the families not going to be allowed there? I mean, if some team ends up going from start to finish and it's a 3-month process, the guys with kids are not going to want to do that. and certainly their families aren't going to want to be alone apart that long. So I think starting now, after, you know, maybe even after phase two, looking at phase three is where the players are really going to have a voice in this, and perhaps they can use some of this, give, you know, just like Bettman did with the Olympics, use this as bargaining tools for the next CBA. So I think that there is going to be some butting of heads, perhaps not phase two, but phase three and into playing. So it's going to be something to really be interesting to keep an eye on to see just what they're allowed and what they're going to be asking for.
Hey, Murph, in your conversations with players, what's their biggest concern moving forward? Is it as far as like what this format will look like? Is it exactly what we've mentioned of like three games a day? What's the ice quality going to be like for these games if they're the third game, right? Or is it conditioning? What is your thought of, you know, what the biggest concern has been from players?
I think mainly it's the family issue. It's the quarantine issue. It's the isolation, how that's going to work. Certainly guys are going to have questions about ice quality and stuff in Vegas, there's three games a day, but, you can, that's not as big of one right now. You know, and guys, it's just the personal level, like Bo Horvat's having a child in mid to late July, and he could be in training camp at that time. If he leaves to go, for the birth, does he have to quarantine them for 14 days before he can come back into the facilities? Like, these are the kind of things that are the most pressing on the players. I think it's just personally how it's going to affect them, what they're going to be allowed to do, how long they might have to be away from everyone. And those are usually, at least for guys with families and the guys that are married, those are the biggest talking points.
And Murphy, Sportsnet and on Canucks Hockey. Thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, fellas. Have yourselves a good day.
You too. Thanks, Murph.
You can follow him at Sportsnet Murph, as if you don't already, on Twitter. Just shy of 100,000 followers. I should have mentioned that. You know, hopefully we can get Murph to 100,000 before the season kicks back up.
Yeah, if you don't already follow him, shame on you. Go do it right now and help him get over that milestone.
Do it for, you know, come for the Peach content, stay for the Canucks content.
Yeah, it might be the other way around. You stay for the Peach content. That's what we have to highlight when it comes to Murph's Twitter and social media, for sure.
So it's Bick and Nizar, Brendan Batchelor here on Social Distance Central. Jim Benning met with Reach Deep yesterday, Dan Riccio and Randy Janda. Great interview. You can check out at sportsnet.ca. They did ask him about, you know, because Jim Benning has been on record many times talking about recouping picks for this upcoming draft. Yes, they gave one away for JT Miller, but he mentioned it again yesterday. And I just want to play the clip and we'll kind of expand on it on the back end of it. Here's Jim talking to Reach Deep yesterday, and he does mention, you know, regathering a pick back again.
I feel really good about the players that we have in our system right now. Like, our prospect depth, I feel, is as good as it's ever been since I've been here. So, you know, but this, you know, if we were to get, you know, more picks, we can continue to add to that group and, you know, solidify that group. So, you know, that's something that if we can do it, and if we can, you know, get an extra pick here or there, that I'd like to try to figure it out.
So here's the thing, Batch, is, you know, we've heard the idea of trying to get picks before and it hasn't always come out to fruition. But this is an off season where a lot of people like to say they are in cap hell. And I've kind of taken the stance of they are, but there's a lot of aggressive, interesting options you can exercise to get yourself out of that. And that includes being active in the trade market. And if this is one of the things Jim Benning is talking about and is willing to be aggressive and follow through, well, then there is an opportunity to do exactly what he's talking about.
Yeah, there certainly is. Now, you know, what guys are movable or what players they would look at parting ways with in order to try and recoup those picks is an interesting question. You know, we've talked in the past about Jake Virtanen's status. Obviously, he's a free agent, so that's not really a trade chip you can use unless you re-sign him and then try to move him on afterwards. The Louis Erickson contract isn't going to be movable. So Jim Benning and the management group will still have to try and be relatively creative if they want to recoup picks. And you know, you look at the group of futures players that they have, prospects that maybe aren't the grade A prospects, like you wouldn't expect them to part with Podkolzin or Hoglander or anyone like that. But could they create a market for someone like Cole Lind, could they create a market for other players like that in that scenario, guys that are still in the American Hockey League that don't immediately fit into the Canucks' plans, and with this team probably looking to have its window really open in the next 3 or 4 years. If you don't see a player fitting in that time frame, then maybe it makes sense you can be aggressive to try and move off of someone like that. But as much as it's easy to say, yes, we'd like to recoup picks, the actuality of being able to do it, especially in a year like this with all sorts of different moving parts, and who knows what the salary cap's going to be, and free agency could be more messy than usual, I still think it'll be quite a challenge for not just the Canucks management group, but any management group to make these sorts of moves if they don't have the draft pick capital to do it. And assuming, you know, I guess there is still a chance the Canucks have that first round pick if they lose the series to Minnesota, but assuming they win that series, they don't have a first round pick, they don't have a second round pick. When you don't have, you know, things like that to use as chips, then it makes it that much more difficult. And especially if they want to try and acquire a first round pick, I don't necessarily know what a package would look like that would allow them to do that without giving up players that would send the fan base into a frenzy, which, you know what, it might be something that they explore. But I think it's going to still be quite challenging for Benning and his brain trust to, you know, acquire, say, a first round pick if they don't have one.
Vic Nizar, Brennan Batchelor on Social Distance Central. We'll get to Game It Takes coming up in about 10 minutes. Also, during yesterday's media call, Jim Benning was asked about a Canucks player. Naturally, you know, I go look and reflect on that player's season. And it dawned on me that the player he was talking about is morphing into Jay-Z. I'll explain it a bit on Social Distance Central on Sportsnet 650. It is Social Distance Central. Vic Nizar and Brandon Batra here on Sportsnet 650. And yeah, I mentioned before we went to break, Jim Benning talking about a Canucks player, and it dawned on me that one, this Canucks player is morphing into Jay-Z, and he's one of my favorite artists because his best value is how consistently great he is, right? There's definitely artists who have better peaks, especially with individual songs, but not often enough times in my life has someone said to me, hey, put that Jay-Z song on right now. But all the time you hear, play California Love, or play Hypnotize, or Lose Yourself, whatever. And so I think there's a lot of artists that their best song is better than Jay-Z's best song, but you know, he creates the best albums. Back to front, his albums tell a great story. They take you through the journey, of course, right? So I don't necessarily go out of my way to listen to a specific Jay-Z song. I will binge listen to him for hours, though, because every song is like 8 out of 10 or above. Every song. So you may seek out individual songs from other artists, but good luck trying to skip over one of Jay-Z's. When it comes on, you're settled. And yeah, despite telling these great stories in his albums, despite being consistently great, because there's not enough of that individual greatness in the songs, his work almost gets overlooked. That consistency gets overlooked and underrated. And through his entire career, he's got one Grammy for Best Rap Album. Just one. And it came really early on. Hard Knock Life, 1998. So Jim Benning yesterday talks to media. He said something about Elias Pettersson. And in reflecting on his season, it dawned on me, this is what Elias Pettersson is morphing into. He's morphing into Jay-Z. Here's Jim from yesterday.
It was a harder year for him this year than last year because right from the start of the year, you know, teams, they paid close attention to him, and you know, they knew that to beat us or to compete against us, they were going to have to slow him down. So I know early in the season, playing against the other team's top lines, their top, you know, two D men, they weren't giving him a lot of time and space at times. He was getting frustrated there, and I know the coaches talked to him about this, and you know, but he, to his credit, he's an extremely hardworking player, and he just worked his way through it. You know, he understood that, you know, that's what's going to happen to him now going forward, and he found ways to, you know,
to get his time and space, to get his ice, to get his shots off, and, you know, continue to grow as a player. And I think had another excellent season for us. So, you know, every year he seems to, you know, get better and better. And I don't think he's at his ceiling yet. He's going to continue to grow as he gets physically stronger. And, you know, I think he has a chance to be a real star in our league for a long time.
I'm sure he got frustrated at times during the season. But when you look back at the season, there is food in your fridge that didn't have time to spoil in the time Elias Pettersson had scoring droughts this season. That's how consistent he was. 2 games was his longest drought. 6 days was the longest drought. Not enough time for your milk to go bad. So he's morphing into Jay-Z. If you treat seasons like albums, Elias Pettersson has won major award, the Calder Trophy, fairly early on, like Jay-Z. Knock Life, not Jay-Z's best album, but he won the award for it. Elias Pettersson's rookie year won't be his best season, but he gets an award for it. And there's players that have much higher highs, like there are artists who have much higher highs than Jay-Z. You might want to listen to one track and someone else, but if Jay-Z track comes on, you're seldom going to say to yourself, I don't want to listen to this one right now. It will definitely hit a sweet spot. And the way Elias Pettersson plays, who's the guy he gets linked to the most? It's Pavel Datsyuk. So a ton of highlights, but his overall play far more impactful. Not a lot of Hart Trophy love for Datsyuk over the years. So if you set the over-under on Pettersson Hart Trophy's wins at 1.5, I'd probably take the under. That's not an indication of his own greatness. And to be honest, I don't need to see the awards. They're a reflection of how we perceive someone's impact of the game. Jay-Z had a big impact on the music industry, more so than any awards can tell you. He's done it through his consistency. Elias Pettersson is already a consistent, productive player. When he turns that into a consistent, impactful player, Lee's going to have something to watch out for. Spick Nazar, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, you get to watch firsthand how consistent this guy is. You didn't have to wait very long to say his name when he was on the score sheet this season.
No, certainly not. And you know, I like the comparison. I do think we see a consistency in his game. And, you know, not just the offensive side of his game, but, you know, some of the underappreciated elements of the game, although I think fans have really grown to appreciate his defensive ability. We see him, you know, really hustle on the back check at times. You know, there are numerous times throughout the season I can recall watching as he came back below his own goal line to help a defenseman who was outmanned on the puck. And, you know, he, in his own way, even though he's a center iceman, was able to help trigger a breakout. So yes, he's a very consistent player, and that bodes well that he has found that level of consistency at this early stage of his career. Because, you know, if you had to pick one thing that young players in the NHL struggle with the most, and we've seen it with numerous young players with this Vancouver Canucks club, you know, Jake Virtanen comes to mind, Ben Hutton when he was here, you know, the list goes on. Nikolai Goldobin obviously has struggled to find a job in the NHL full-time at all, but, you know, consistency is a big part of why Travis Green didn't trust him. You don't have that with Elias Pettersson, and you don't have that with Quinn Hughes either, and that really shows you the level that young players are coming into the NHL at these days, which again sort of ties back into the conversation we were having before the break that it might be quite important for this Canucks organization to try and recoup a high pick in the draft, because if you can move into that first round, then who knows, right? You know, I talk about your window being open right now. If you can acquire a first round pick, assuming you don't have your own, then that player could be helping you on a playoff run in 1 or 2 or 3 years from now. So more than ever, we're seeing young players come into the NHL and immediately find that level of ability to help their teams win on a night in, night out basis. And as a result, I think that's going to put more emphasis on the draft than we've ever seen before, especially this season, because again, as we were talking about earlier, trades and free agency are going to be a little bit more difficult if the salary cap isn't able to go up. And you know, the Canucks could potentially, if they're able to make a move and find a package to bring in a high pick, add another elite young player to this stable of guys they already have that doesn't even include Nils Höglander and Vasily Podkolzin yet, because they've yet to play an NHL game.
Yeah, the two biggest battles young players have in my mind, are consistency, which, you know, Elias Pettersson's checked off, as you mentioned, Quinn Hughes checked off, and stamina, right? And that stamina thing is also a thing that great players have to deal with, of you've got to be great all the time, right? You need to have the physical stamina to do it. We talked about the rookie wall last year with Elias Pettersson. That never came to fruition with Quinn Hughes. That's what was so stunning about his season, is maybe it's because of the gracefulness in which he skates in, or how smooth he is in general, that he never really got that those bags on him that, you know, drag down a season. So it's two guys obviously Canucks fans are super excited about, and there's the easy markers that you look for great players, they have checked them off quite easily. So I just want to touch on that from yesterday from Jim Benning.
One question for you before we get to Game of Takes. If Elias Pettersson is Jay-Z, then who is Quinn Hughes?
Oh, man. I'm going to have to reflect on that. Maybe I have an answer for you tomorrow. But, you know, someone super flashy in the now.
Like Kanye West, maybe?
Oh, man. I don't think Quinn's is crazy enough for that. Maybe like Kendrick? You know, like flashy right now.
Yeah.
It's got to be Drake.
Drake? Sure. Yeah, I mean, he's got the swag for it.
Yeah, I see it. I'm on board with that. Quinn Hughes is Drake. Elias Pettersson is Jay-Z. And the Canucks are building a team of hip-hop all-stars.
Beyonce is Quinn Hughes. Someone just chimed in into our 650-650 text message inbox.
Let's not even touch that.
No. So we do welcome the submissions, of course. Keep the text coming. As one person this week got into our Game of Takes through our text line, 650-650. That was Joey who got into our Game of Takes. Chris K Films on Twitter also got into the Game of Takes. So this is how it goes. We give you a topic for the week, and we're going to air the two takes. Unedited, pure takery from Chris and Joey. So we're going to do this for weeks to come. Someone's going to stay on the throne for a long time, we hope. Or maybe they get dethroned. Maybe you rise up to the challenge to take down whoever this week's winner is going to be. So we'll start off with this. This is our first Game of Takes. This is Chris Keen at Chris K Films, his take on Jim Benning.
Any performance review of Jim Benning's tenure as general manager of the Vancouver Canucks must incorporate the full six-year period. The team he took over was aging and ripe for a rebuild. However, Benning took the approach of trying to turn the team around quickly. While a Sedin renaissance led the team to a first-round playoff exit in 2015, the following 4 years was anything but competitive. This was the second worst team in the NHL between October 2015 and April 2019, ahead of only the Buffalo Sabres by a single point. During that period, the Canucks were a cap-max team, regularly spending big money in free agency and trading away draft picks for veterans. There was no rebuild, only consistent failure and an unwillingness to acquire and use draft picks at the draft. This has led to a team that is currently capped out with their top two players still on entry-level deals and the most expensive bottom six forward group in the NHL. Many like to credit Benning for our success at the draft. However, drafting is largely a collaborative process involving many different people. And yet, this is a team over Benning's tenure that has alienated smart people and pushed them out of the organization. Lawrence Gilman, Lauren Henning, Trevor Linden, and now Judd Brackett. Finally, despite all this, some fans will still claim that Jim Benning has done an average job. I don't. And if your hockey team is merely average, that puts you as a playoff bubble team. Is that really good enough? Is a bubble team really the end goal? If it is, great. But for me, I want to see this team win a Stanley Cup. So average on the ice or the front office is not good enough for me.
Man, that is so epic.
I love it.
Love Game of Takes. So that's Chris at Chris K Films on Twitter. That's Chris with the C-H-R. That is awesome. So we go straight from Chris to Joey Curie at 604 Joey, who chimed in on his stance on Jim Benning.
Hey
Hey, y'all. It's Joey from Richmond. We're here to talk a little bit about Jim Benning, and I'm here to back my boy Jim up. I think there's obviously been some pros and cons to his tenure here, but I think he's been showing steady improvement. I think he's made a lot of good decisions recently, and I think most of his mistakes are in the past. I think he's settled and grown into his role here, and I have a lot of faith in him. You know, we've said plenty of times that what other market is caring or arguing about who the office staff is. Judd Brackett, he's a good scout, but the reality is these guys move on to other organizations to move into better positions. I think Jim Benning is the guy for here and now. I think JT Miller was an insane steal of a trade. I think it's the best trade anyone made this year. I think not trading for Tyson Barrie by association was an excellent move. I think not trading for PK Subban by association was an excellent move. I think what Jim hasn't done recently is almost, if not even more crucial than what he has done. I think the Tyler Myers contract is not that bad. I think the Brock Besser contract is pretty damn good. I think the Tyler Toffoli trade is laughable when you look at guys like Blake Coleman going for a first round pick, the same first round pick that we gave up for JT Miller. I think Benning's going to re-sign Markstrom. I think it's going to be a tough summer. I think we're going to lose some guys that sentimentally it's going to be tough to take, but it's a business and the business is winning, and I think Jim Benning is the guy to help us do that.
I'm impressed, Bick, with the level of take we received from both sides here in Game of Takes today. This is good stuff for both Chris and Joey, and I know people already oftentimes have their preconceived notions about which side of the argument they're on, but both of these guys on their various sides made good points. I'm going to cast my vote once we get the poll up here on Twitter shortly, and we invite all of you to cast your vote in Game of Takes as well. But you know, it's going to be hard for me to pick, right? Because as we've talked about earlier in the week, I think this is a situation where the truth lies in the middle. Both sides have legitimate arguments, and so I'm gonna have a tough time voting. I'm not gonna lie. And I can't hear Bick right now, so maybe we've lost our
connection issue. Oh, you're there. Yeah, okay. So Game of Takes is underway. I love this, man. This is I think we're gonna put both up on Twitter at Sportsnet650. I want to listen back to him because you know we do this and for the first time, and I'm blown away. I'm impressed with how awesome those were. So yeah, you'll be able to vote at Sportsnet650. We'll put that poll up in a matter of seconds here. But it's
okay,
so there you go.
Vote on it immediately.
Again, Chris and Joey both brought the heat, man. Only the takes are real. The climb is all there is. So you can jump online at Sportsnet650, cast your votes. Whoever wins, we're going to bring back onto the show tomorrow. And we'll spend 5-10 minutes with them, expand on the take, and also let them pick next week's take. So,
yeah.
We're
going to provide some options for them to pick a take next week. But
because if you have the throne, you should get some reward.
Yeah, exactly. So you get the, I guess, the advantage of choosing which argument you want to defend for next week. And again, you know, we could have a multiple week reigning champion. We could have, many title changes, I guess you could call them.
I'm excited for the person that gets dethroned and then like 4 weeks later comes back.
Oh yeah, exactly. Or maybe even the next week, right? We're going to have that opportunity. Again, anyone that's listening right now can be a part of Game of Takes going forward. You can get at us on Twitter once we unveil next week's topic tomorrow, or you can text in to 650-650 on the text line. And you know what? We want to hear from you as well. What do you think of Chris's take? What do you think of Joey's take? Do you agree with the things that were said? Do you disagree strongly with some of the things that were said? We'll talk about this more tomorrow on the show as well. But the other element I'm interested to see play out is, you know, getting your Twitter following behind you, which is now what Joey and Chris have a chance to do here before we come back on the air at noon tomorrow. These guys will need your votes in order to move on in Game of Takes and become our first champion. So I want to see what each of Joey and Chris have in store in terms of trying to stuff the ballot box with people on Twitter and you know, trying to encourage people to get involved.
We'll talk to the winner tomorrow. That's coming up on Social Distance Central. Coming up on Reach Deep, which is just moments away. Hal Gill, Stanley Cup champion, is going to be joining Dan Riccio and Randeep Janda. So go catch your votes at Sportsnet 650. Vote for Chris, vote for Joey, vote for whoever you want, and we'll see who the winner for the Game of Takes is. We'll speak to them tomorrow. It's Bick Nizar, Brendan Batcher on Sportsnet 650.